It's 12:09 on WGN. This is John Williams. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman's our producer. We're glad that you've tuned in. If you want to call or text along the way, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. A couple of you actually were asking during our show previous to this about Ditka's closing and wondering if maybe that had to do not specifically with coronavirus shutting down the business, but some businesses and restaurants have life cycles, and some of you are wondering if, in fact, that wasn't part of what led Ditka's to close downtown, though the Ditka's restaurants in the suburbs will stay open. I don't have an answer to that today, but we'll talk more about that on this show tomorrow. We had a lot of conversations earlier today about the businesses that are not able to be open and sort of the inconsistencies too. If a large Home Depot can accommodate people, why can't smaller mom and pop shops or other chains that have franchises stay open? And it's starting to frustrate people considerably. And then when you look at Fran Spielman's story in the Sun Times today, it's just some numbers that I guess everybody has access to, but it was interesting to see her writing on this. The stay-at-home shutdown of Chicago's economy triggered by the coronavirus will cost the city hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue and probably in excess of $500 million, according to a top mayoral aide. Alderman Anthony Beal wanted an answer to the question that Lori Lightfoot has so far refused to answer, that is, give us some numbers. And they're saying $100 million, maybe $500 million. We know that it will be several hundreds of millions of dollars, according to the mayor's office, probably in excess of half a billion. The $3 trillion stimulus bill that Speaker Nancy Pelosi pushed through the House last week includes $1 trillion for cities and states, but that bill continues to face opposition in the Republican-controlled Senate. Senate leaders Mitch McConnell and others are meeting on this very issue even as we speak. It'll be a huge puzzle piece to how it is that we manage through this. According to the city, there will be a market reaction to that as well, which will also drive what our costs are. Just a few notes about how the city and some small businesses are managing things. The word is, too, that more people are getting on airplanes. If you've flown any time, and most of us have not, you may be noticing a few more people on the planes. We'll talk a little bit more about the business in the sky Amy Guth. That'll come your way in the second half hour of this hour on WGN. John Najarian, the founder of MarketRebellion.com, the financial news, education, and subscription site, is on the phone line. John, let's start with you. We'll take a break here in just a moment, but then continue the conversation. Is there a stock or a sector you're liking especially today? What's got your interest, John?
Well, given that we had the two biggest retailers on earth, that being Walmart and Home Depot, declaring earnings today, and we've got Target tomorrow, I'd focus on those a little bit, John. And then after the break, maybe we can talk a little bit more about specifics on both.
We'll do that in a minute. This is WGN. John Najarian joins us for a weekly visit. We're talking about some stocks specifically and some of the earnings reports that are coming out. Finish that thought, John. So you were talking about Target. You were talking about Walmart. What's going on here, other than the obvious, I guess?
Yeah, well, Walmart absolutely put up phenomenal numbers. A lot of that, John, as you and I would both suspect, came from stocking up. Consumers getting out there and perhaps buying weeks or even a month or more worth of goods that they could hoard away in case they were stuck inside for what has now seemed like forever. That was great for Walmart. It was also very good for Walmart in China, believe it or not, because Walmart in China does, as they do here, omni-channel, meaning that you can walk into the store or you can order it online. And their online omni-channel business in China was up 200% in the quarter. That's a phenomenal jump because everything Walmart does is on a big scale. So when any part of their business is up even 10 or 20%, that's a lot. It's kind of like when Amazon reports the same. But when they do that in China, my gosh, that shows that their infrastructure in China is pretty strong for them to be able to deliver goods in China to the extent that they did. Now, quickly, Home Depot, also good numbers, but they had to spend like crazy on the to deal with COVID. And apparently that cut into their profitability pretty dramatically. They still made a nice profit, but it wasn't what Wall Street expected. The stock's not getting killed for it, of course, but it is down. It's softer during the day today. And Target tomorrow, they're lucky because they're not as dependent on groceries as Walmart is. In fact, their CEO has said repeatedly, I do not want to be known as a grocery store. We will provide certain essentials for people, but we want you to come in and we want to make money on the other items that are much more profitable, because as we both know, grocery items are just not very profitable. If you get into the 1.5-2% range, that's a lot.
Yeah. But I have noticed that you said the people in China evidently are stocking up the way we are. Members of my family, and my family too, have made some of the biggest single store purchases we've made in a very long time, to a Target or to Jewel, you know, stocking up on supplies and food. And I don't necessarily mean hoarding, but maybe just minimizing the trips that you take. So instead of shopping for a few days or a week, you're shopping for 2 or 3 weeks. And you are buying a lot more supplies than you normally would. I mean, some of us who are fortunate enough to be able to spend a few $100 at a crack have been doing it.
Yeah. And in fact, Mike Wilson from Morgan Stanley just made that point with us on the halftime report over at CNBC. Mike said that he believes that the reason that the markets are doing as well as they are right here is that as consumers cut back on travel, which has been dramatic, we've seen like a 90% drop over at Southwest and similar over at United and American. As they've cut back on travel, which includes, of course, hotels and so forth, they have been buying goods. So a lot of the money that would have otherwise been spent between goods and between travel has been almost exclusively rotated over into goods purchases. And when services start coming back online, that's one of the reasons that he is getting more bullish here about the direction for the market in the near term.
Bob Surratt had somebody on that was saying about as much today on his show, that he thinks that he doesn't have a crystal ball. It could get worse, but he actually is optimistic that we're past the worst of this, at least in terms of the markets, not the economy. That might be a longer slog. And yet the New Yorker has a piece this week, and it is not so optimistic. The idea that it's going to be an ugly-looking V, but we're going to keep coming back, they said, is folly. And I guess we all just wish we had that crystal ball.
Right. Yeah, we wish we had that crystal ball. But what we can do is actually measure not only how much we're traveling right now, John, but how much or not traveling, but how much the increase is week over week. And that is what's been dramatic. And what gives people some hope that maybe we can be coming out of this in the not-too-distant future.
Are you pleased with the markets today since the Dow picked up over 900? They're not giving it all back today. Are we going to hold on to that, do you hope?
Well, I hope so. It certainly feels like we're going to. I see a number of stocks like Hewlett-Packard, obviously in the computer space, a number of Chinese stocks like Baidu and Alibaba are also rebounding nicely today and pushing towards highs that they haven't seen in a long time. So overall, I'd say the mood is better over the last several hours than it was in the pre-market, and likely to get better into some more testimony we had today, the Fed chairman and Secretary Mnuchin before, you know, a remote, a Zoom call of senators. That was interesting to watch for the first time for me. But I think overall, people are getting a little more excited about 95% of the states are ready to open up by Memorial Day parts of their economy. And that'll certainly help, John.
What's the market reaction going to be to the next round of stimulus. That is, the Senate doesn't like it. Maybe it won't go. The House does. If we do or don't get it, how do the markets react to that?
Well, that's not going to be a decision in the next 12 or 24 hours, but probably a longer negotiation based on what we've heard so far. I would imagine that they do get a several trillion dollar package passed, but I don't know about the $3 trillion that the House sent to the Senate, because it had next to no input from any of the committees, literally none, including, of course, Nancy Pelosi. She have put this before the House where they have the votes, passed it, but it didn't come out of a single committee in the House. It just instead was more or less, as you might imagine, a lot of the lobbyists that helped write this bill, and I think that they'll be trying to strip out a lot of it before this gets passed. That slows the process down. So, unfortunately, I think it'll be perhaps a week or more before we get to anything like that next stimulus.
I'm reading at yahoo.com on the finance page, investors going long may find the best opportunities in technology and serendipity stocks, according to James McDonald from Hercules Investments. This is a wonderful time to invest, he told Yahoo Finance's The First Trade. Not only does it, that is tech, look wonderful, but they have economic power to survive whatever happens with this market sell-off. So if you want to buy, you got to do tech. Do you agree with that, that that's the safest place to put money right now?
I do. Again, we were adding to Facebook today. That's been a very strong performer because of the stay-at-home and the folks that are online as much as they are. Facebook has WhatsApp for communication. They have Instagram, as well as the namesake Facebook itself, that are all doing huge numbers and basically crushing a lot of their online competition. So, yes, tech is where I would focus. We're probably pretty close to 70% overweighted in tech in the portfolios that we manage.
Well, if you were just creating a portfolio that mirrored the Dow or the S&P, wouldn't that be a safe place to put money right now? It would have been a very safe place maybe a month ago, too, but if the economy continues to go back up, anything that's going to ride that tide will look good, right?
True. We've got an expiration today for, just like you and I were talking a month ago about a negative price for crude oil. There's another crude oil contract, the June contract, expires today. There are several big oil companies in the Dow, which is one of the reasons many of us don't track that as a metric for performance. We note it because of the price points and so forth, and it's a big number, you know, when you're talking about 29,000 or 28,000 in the Dow. But because of that overweighting in energy and so forth, I'd rather be in the S&P 500 and or the NASDAQ. And yes, you could just simulate either of those just by buying the triple Q for the NASDAQ or the SPY for the S&P 500.
Back to James McDonald, that CEO over at Hercules Investments. And yeah, he said some of the things you were saying too. He said right now the leader in the S&P 500 are no longer oil companies and big industrial companies, they're tech companies, and they are still sitting on hoards of cash. On Monday, Moderna, no surprise, surged more than 24%. 24% up for Moderna. And somebody's going to get rich if they figure this thing out, that's for sure.
Yep. There are 118 different vaccine trials going on right now. This is according to Fundstrat. And, you know, the one in Great Britain, Oxford, producing that one. Two in the United States that are really far along as far as positive statements about each, Gilead as well as Moderna. Moderna is up 70%, by the way, in the month of May. So, yes, you're right. There's going to be a lot of money to be made by whomever, and it might be more than one that actually gets a working vaccine or treatment for COVID.
It's just escaping now, but I had in front of me the name of a business that is a retailer. They specialize in imports, and they've declared bankruptcy. I guess there are some that just aren't going.
You're thinking of Pier One Imports?
I am. Thank you, Steve. And I guess there's some that just aren't going to weather this storm.
Yeah, sadly. And Pier One was one of those that has struggled for a long, long time. Probably enough said about that one. It's just a very tough space.
And is that maybe what's going to happen with small, medium, and large businesses? That is, a local restaurant, a major corporation we know. This was the straw that broke the camel's back, but some of these companies maybe weren't that healthy to begin with.
Yeah, that's very possible. And unfortunately, you know, it is a sad fact, but some 78 to 90% of small businesses fail within the first 2 years. And a lot of that is, of course, because the entrepreneurs themselves misjudge the market, or they get started on a shoestring and don't have enough to weather any kind of storm or any kind of, they're just too optimistic, quite frankly. But there's also a lot of them that succeed and continue to grow and do well. So, you know, unfortunately, that's the way capitalism works. There are winners and losers. And, you know, we applaud the and we cheer for the folks that can actually make it through times like this.
MarketRebellion.com's John Najarian. Thanks for your time again, John. Good to talk to you.
Always. Thank you, John.
John Williams, this is the Wind Trust Business Lunch. Lisa Pikel is supposed to join us now, and if she doesn't, I'll just talk briefly about some of the things that they are doing over there, and then we'll connect with her another day. But Pikel, Orrin Pikel Builders, they do high-end homes, but they're also doing a lot of bump-outs and build-outs for people's homes, building offices, separate rooms, things like that. Two of the things that they are expecting might be trends in the future. This is the home that you own. You're now going to work from home. Those things became less popular because people are very mobile, and a lot of the things that you would typically have in a home office, you can have in your hand. You can have in a laptop. People, it says here, the ubiquity of handheld devices had something to do with home offices going down, but maybe they will come back because we're going to be doing more work from home. Maybe we'll never go back to the traditional office workspace. So some space at home becomes more of a premium. Where are you going to find that space and how are you going to integrate it? The large open space floor plans that are very popular these days, where the kitchen folds into a living dining space, and we might not live that way so much anymore. We might think about that space more as a premium if you're also going to be working from home. So maybe you carve out some of that space and use it back again for the home office. Another place where space might be reconsidered is the master bath. Those large spa-like baths we envy can be just as luxurious but more useful if flexible and separated, so separate family members can use the shower, somebody can use the bath, somebody can use the toilet all at the same time. I've had both of those feelings for years. Never had one of those. Thought, boy, that looks really swell. But wow, what a lot of space to dedicate to maybe one person at a time. And again, if space is a premium because we're all going to perhaps be working more and living more inside our homes, even living more inside our homes, then how you use that space becomes a premium, doesn't it? Pantries and storage, another place that people will reconsider. Home delivery from books to grocery stores is part of the new economy, but perhaps not as immediate. We likely see more storage space for non-perishable and smart pantries with integrated technology for reordering and package drop-off access for deliveries. Boy, a lot packed into those two sentences, but I think that's all ringing true right now, isn't it? That is, do you have a space in your home right now just to store stuff like supplies, like cleaning supplies or canned goods or stuff that you would have at work that you're now going to have at home? Where is your storage space? And then the pantry of tomorrow, meaning very soon, might have more items, more space for non-perishable food items. And if you're lucky, a smart pantry with an integrated technology for reordering. And then finally, something that, boy, you never thought of before, but you think of maybe more now, is drop-off access for deliveries. Either because you don't want stuff stolen or because you're thinking about a safe way to do it. Lisa Pakel joins us now. Lisa, I'm stealing all of your notes, and this stuff, I'm going to go to work for you. This stuff sounds pretty good to me.
Fantastic. I think I was just listening to you. You're doing a great job.
Well, I'm just reading some of the notes that you forwarded to my producer, and I'm thinking, I mean, is this something that you all were thinking about prior to COVID-19, or is this really a kind of a 180 in terms of imagining the home space?
Always trying to reimagine the home space and to try and be in the forefront of what's going on, for sure. I just heard you mention the idea of package pickup and delivery, and that was actually something that we did in a concept house almost 12 years. It was 2008 was when that was done, when kind of dry cleaning and the pickup and delivery, Peapod Food Services, and now I think it's just kind of blown up for all intents and purposes. So some of the ideas are kind of a little bit older, maybe a little bit ahead of their time to a certain extent, and I think that we're still kind of looking at today, you know, how COVID is going to impact our lives and the way that we live in our homes. And some things I think are going to be able to be recycled and enhanced, and I think some things are going to change in both the short term and the long term, right? So I think that there's probably a 6 month, you know, a 1 to 2 year cycle on some of these things too, as the world starts to change and evolve, as it is just about every day right now, right?
Lisa Pakel's on the phone line, the president of Orrin Pakel Building Group. It's a custom home design build firm. You know, I'm just thinking about that too, though, the delivery space. I wonder if that would be kind of like a mudroom or almost a separate outdoor closet that a delivery person, like you said, from laundry to food to Amazon products, they could drop it off there. And maybe it doesn't even have much more access to the house or not the immediate living space, but it is a sort of safe storage area for a delivery person.
Exactly, exactly. That's kind of the detail that we've been doing. And it's I would say, like a small walk-in closet size, you know, maybe some hooks for some dry cleaning, bench storage for Amazon packages and larger items. But then, of course, from the outside, the door can either be put on a keypad or some kind of code lock. I know that there are some technology companies that are working with UPS and different tracking systems to allow delivery drivers access and only that access. And then, of course, the door to the house would remain secure and locked, so that truly is just access to those areas. You know, I think a way to even elevate that a little bit further is, you know I live in a condo downtown, and one of the worst parts about getting Amazon packages is now you got to break down all the boxes and then haul them back down the elevator. You know, to have easy access to recycling from those areas, to be able to get rid of some of that packaging, not even bring it into the house, I think is probably some of those tweaks that are going to be taking place as we move into the new world.
One of my pet peeves is media, everything from laptops to desktops to computers and TVs and all of the things that are in our home. And I know they're more mobile and compact, but it just seems to me like a lot of us still have a cacophony of wires and gadgets laying around, and there's just no sense to it. If I was going to design a workspace for me in home, it would anticipate all of this stuff and make it look less messy and easier to get to.
Absolutely. I think that workspace in the home is definitely going to be a hot topic for the next couple of years. And I think it is absolutely all about organization, right? But I also think that it's also about creating space and a way to turn off. I've talked to a lot of people that are working from home right now, and at the end of the day, it feels like the day just doesn't end, right? Because your laptop is sitting in your kitchen or in your dining room, and you might get up and kind of stroll over to get a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, but then you're kind of in your space. So when does the day end? And how does design potentially impact the way that we work at home, not just from an ergonomic, you know, making sure that our backs stay strong and healthy, or maybe a standing desk or organizing our cords, but how do we let design or let design influence the way that we truly do work and live at home and create some of those boundaries as to where my day is going to start and stop because I need to make sure that I'm spending the time with my family or the personal time that I need.
So literally a physical door, maybe a sliding door. I'm now not working. I'm closing this door or closing off that area. Is that what you're thinking about?
Possibly. You know, and I think, you know, some people have the luxury of a third bedroom. You know, could that be a space that is now your workspace, but is also a convertible space for guests, ultimately, using cabinetry or different detailing to allow those spaces to be convertible and flexible? You know, is it just a more of a metaphysical kind of delineation of, you know, when I sit over here in this space, this is when I'm working, and I make sure that I can clean up my space and feel good about the fact that this is also where I'm going to have my dinner tonight, because the space just doesn't allow for that extra room. So creating those kind of delineations in line in the sand, as well as, you know, what is it going to look like if working from home on a regular basis, at least for this next 6 months, what if this is forever? You know, I think that we can also apply some of the design thinking tools that we use already to the way that people are going to live in their homes, both in the short term and the long term. When we think about designing a custom home or talking to a client early on, one of the real estate rule number one is location, location, location. Are you in the space that really you want to be, and is this where what your life is going to look like? Now, I think that that's a very long-term approach. I don't necessarily think that people are going to start selling their homes and moving to new locations. You know, after you find your location, then you really look at the design or that floor plan, right? You figure out, is this efficient in how it's designed? And then lastly, you're going to be looking at those organizational components, the interior design, the organizational elements, which is kind of the low-hanging fruit. So I could almost see us, to a certain extent, working in almost a reverse timeline of how we would, if you were going to start with a blank piece of paper, because those are the easiest things for us to kind of be able to wrap our head around, to create short-term solutions. But ultimately, I could see long-term changes. And when I say long-term, maybe that's a couple years from now, 18 months out, that maybe people are going to remodel their homes and reconfigure those design spaces if they've identified that they're in the location that they want to be. Or maybe they decide, you know what, this isn't the right location for me. Maybe I do, my life now looks different. My day-to-day looks different. And I want to change that on a little bit more of a permanent and larger change scale, which will take some more time.
Either way, the idea that you create literally or metaphysically a separation between your work life and your other life, I think, is just all of a sudden we're all going, oh yeah, that's been a problem. We haven't addressed it. Now it's acute. Mm-hmm. So starting tomorrow or 2 years from now, that has to be something that we all address in our lives. We're out of time, Lisa, but this is really interesting. Lisa Pickell, president of Orrin Pickell Building Group. I didn't even get a chance to talk to you about being a docent downtown on some of those boat tours. We'll have to talk about that another day. If people want to visit your site, where do they go, Lisa?
Our website is www.pickellbuilders, PickellBuilders.com.
All right, Lisa. Stay well. Nice to talk to you today.
Thanks, John. You too. All right. Bye.
It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute. This is Steve Bertrand.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Neopenda is a Chicago startup that specializes in making neonatal vital monitors for babies, but they're switching gears during the pandemic. Chicago Inno says they're developing their products now for adults suffering from the coronavirus. The device monitors vitals like respiratory rate and temperature, and those conditions can then be monitored remotely by a nurse. Not too long ago, there was a race to expand office space in Chicago, but that's hit the skids. In fact, Crane says several companies like Groupon and Career Builder are now trying to sublet their space, at least some of it, and that's just the beginning. And State Farm has already issued $2 billion in credits while we sit home and don't drive. Now it says it's cutting auto rates by $2.2 billion. That's about 11% for the average customer. I'm Steve Bertrand. That's the Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Bertrand, how are the markets doing?
Dow is still down, but it's coming back, down 56 points. The NASDAQ up 71 and the S&P 500 up 4.
On the agribusiness markets, here's Orion Samuelson.
And the markets at the Board of Trade are slightly higher. The July wheat contract is trading at $5.05 a bushel. That's up a penny and a half. The July corn contract is trading right now at $3.25 and that's up 0.75 cents a bushel. And the July soybean contract is trading lower. It's down 2.5 cents a bushel at $8.51. Before the heavy rains of this past 3-4 days came, we did still get a fair amount of planting done. Our weekly planting progress report issued yesterday afternoon shows that 80% of the nation's corn acres were planted as of Sunday night. Illinois with 83%, Indiana 72%, Iowa 96%, and Wisconsin 81%. And 53% of the nation's soybeans had been planted as of Sunday night, 59% in Illinois, 56% in Indiana, 86% in Iowa, and 61% in Wisconsin. There was an event at the White House today attended by people in the food distribution industry, and President Trump had an interesting comment to make. He said, "I read yesterday where we take some cattle in from other countries because of trade deals. I think you should look at terminating those deals. We have a lot of cattle in this country. We don't need to be importing them from other countries," according to the president. And then we've been waiting for news on county and state fair activity. We got some of that from Indiana yesterday with the announcement that Indiana will have 4-H county fairs starting on the 4th of July, according to the director of extension at Purdue University. Jason Henderson said that 4-H fairs that take place throughout the state in Indiana will happen, but he said we're making several changes. Some of the fairs could be done by technology for those who don't want to join crowds at fairs, and overnight stays for animals will be eliminated and will be limited, and 4-H fairs this year will also offer the virtual experience for those who are choosing not to attend. Again, that's the state of Indiana on county fairs, the first one starting July 4th. We'll wait for news from Illinois and Wisconsin and Iowa and other counties on what the future holds this year for 4-H fairs, county fairs, and state fairs. And that's your money on 720 WGN.
When it comes to the fly-in and airline business, I sometimes wonder, what did Amy Guth say? She watches it pretty carefully for us, that and other topics. Hi, Amy. Welcome back.
Hi, John. Thanks so much. You're right. I feel like I'm looking at various pieces of information about the airline industry 2 or 3 times a day to just stay up on the latest of it. But today, a tiny, tiny glimmer of good news. So we've started seeing some securities filings coming in from the big carriers. Of course, I always look to United first because they're based here in Chicago. And United says that it's planning for July capacity to be down 75% from a year ago, which does not sound very good, but it's an improvement from May and June, which is 90%, and April, 95% down. So it's, you know, less terrible news than with the terrible news we had heard. But also, TSA has reported over the past 5 days, there has been a slight uptick to the number of passengers being screened at TSA checkpoints. Still down 90% from a year ago, but still an uptick nonetheless. United's not alone in that. Other carriers are saying similar. Southwest, of course, based in Dallas, they said their operating revenue will likely not decline more than 90% from a year ago, slightly better than the 95% that they had said for last month. So these are tiny little glimmers of hope, but nonetheless, some news coming from the carriers earlier today in those securities filings. You know, we still have to remain, we have to wait and see, will there be another wave in the fall or the winter that might hurt airlines further? But at the moment, this is what we're seeing. Airlines planned for this. Airlines said, you know, let's just go ahead and say this is going to be really rough for us for a while. But at the moment, that second quarter 2020 number is better than they had imagined it.
Yeah, with the caveat that in any other circumstances, that would be a catastrophe, but it's not as catastrophic as the previous numbers were. I talked to Senator Durbin yesterday. He just happened to call in, and he was on his way to the airport. He says, "I got to catch a flight." I regret not having asked him what the airplane or airport experience is like these days, because my guess is they are still kind of eerily empty, both the airports and some of the planes themselves.
That's right. And a lot of airlines have been talking about what the plans are. A lot of it depends on what route you're flying. If you're flying international, it could vary a lot differently based on how that country where you're going to land was impacted by the pandemic. But mostly, generally speaking, airlines are talking about, you know, skipping seats between passengers, just having a lot less capacity. Delta even has started talking about maybe an uptick in travel routes, so a number of flights per day, just so that they can still service the numbers but have less people on the flight. Good news for people who kind of like having that middle seat empty, you want a little elbow room, things like that. That's kind of what they're starting to think about, what the cleaning protocols are, all that kind of stuff that people will be thinking about as they're kind of going, okay, at what point do I feel comfortable flying, going to an airport, traveling to another city, things like that.
So is this another round for State Farm of auto insurance rate cuts? I'm seeing some news about that, or is that what they initially said they were going to do?
So initially they said, we're going to have, if you're a State Farm customer, you are going to see a little bit of a credit on your bill in June because not many people are driving. Therefore, not many claims are being put through because people are getting into less accidents because they're not on the road. So this is another announcement that State Farm has said they're going to cut auto insurance rates around the country to a total of about $2.2 billion. It's going to vary by market, but on average, it's going to be about 11%. So customers, that's some good news for them. In addition to this credit they're going to see coming up on their bill really soon, they're also going to start seeing some lower rates. Now, the vice president of at State Farm did say, hey, we're watching this number, we're looking at this data, but we're looking at ways to support our customers while we monitor and adjust. To me, that says at some point this might be course corrected, of course, but for now, because they've seen such a significant savings, they're going to pass along some of that to their customers. They're not alone in that. Also, Geico and Allstate, they've made some similar moves. In fact, Allstate did it first, and that kind of forced the hands of Geico and State Farm. But insurance companies are, it's going to be really interesting to see later in the year when we look back on data for this time of year, exactly what kind of profit they saw right now. Because here you are paying your premiums regularly, and you know, you have to be insured even if your car is parked, whether it's moving or not. With more people staying home, fewer accidents, they're seeing significant savings right now. So we'll see what that looks like later in the year. But for now, really good news for State Farm customers.
Amen. Business reporter Amy Guth. Good to hear you, Amy. Thank you.
Thanks, John.